Welcome to the Market Genius AI podcast. This is our leaders edition of the show, where we hear from go-to-market leaders on navigating careers and trends, what makes leaders great, and how to win in go-to-market.
In today's episode, I'm excited to be joined by Keith Rosen, a globally recognized pioneer in leadership and sales coaching, best-selling author of Coaching Salespeople into Sales Champions and founder of Profit Builders. Keith, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, super excited to have you here. So let's just start off with an easy question. How did you get started in sales coaching and what inspired you to build Profit Builders?
As many people have asked me, you know, how did you get to where you are? And I would tell them, you know, just, you know, an overnight success, which of course is not true in the least bit. And I remember years ago, it's interesting. I was just talking to one of my old partners who I'm still friends with from 35 years ago, where we opened up a design build company. And I was always responsible for the recruiting and the hiring and the onboarding and continued training. Remember, this is 35 years ago, the word coaching wasn't even used in the business arena.
Yeah.
And we did that for years, and we were the number one rated company in the country and doing some really great work and doing some philanthropic work and building churches and schools. And it was just really super rewarding. And one day, literally, I could vividly remember this. I was sitting in my office and I was reading the paper, and it was the first article that was written about this thing called life coaching. Life coaching, that's what is life coaching? That sounds weird. So I read through the article and I had this epiphany. And as I was reading it, I'm thinking to myself, this is exactly my purpose. This is my dharma. This is the reason why I was put on this planet, not only to support my company and my partners and my employees, but what if I can do this beyond my company? What if I can impact people globally? And I started, you know, creating this vision and thinking, wait a second, does it have to do with life? Because especially today, you know, if you look at work and if you look at life, there's no distinction here. You know, there's just life. Yeah. And over the years, starting with, of course, helping people get better balance in their life, that quickly evolved as I noticed I was attracting basically salespeople and sales leaders, probably because of my background. I quickly moved into sales coaching and executive coaching for salespeople and for leaders. And I remember, you know, I smile when I say this years back, you know, I would talk to my friends or, you know, I'd be at a function and talk to some people. And of course, the conversation comes up. So what do you do? And I would say, oh, so, you know, I'm an executive coach. So you're a coach, like what sport? And so, you know, the sport of business, the sport of sales, the sport of leadership. And they would look at me like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Well, 33 years later, here we are, and have a solid entrenched industry of coaching. Unfortunately, it's not regulated. A lot of people should not be coaches, but that's a whole other conversation. And now it's something where I'm probably spending 80 to 90% of my time helping companies navigate through these new waters, because especially now, everyone is in a state of turmoil. Everyone is in a state of uncertainty. CEO confidence is at an all-time low. So, you know, if you take all these things in consideration, you know, this is when people need coaching more than ever. And unfortunately, this is when they think, oh, no, we can't focus on coaching. We have to focus on sales and revenue. And I'm thinking, no, it doesn't work that way. It's the antithesis. It's the other way around. Build yourself first. The byproduct is a successful team and a successful organization. So at this point, I am so blessed to say I've had the privilege of traveling to 76 countries and 6 continents to deliver this message and really support leaders globally. And I will continually do this until, you know, someone says, Keith, no more, you're done.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well,
that could be. Maybe it's a client. Maybe it could be my wife. I don't know.
Someone might tell you one day. That's incredible. Yeah, leadership speaks to my heart. Whenever we're talking about things, I'm like, maybe we just need to like help these people in a different way, or maybe there's a different way to coach. So yeah. I'm very excited to have this conversation. I'm also like already, you've piqued my interest of coaching in different countries and the different styles and all of that. But before we dive into that, you spoke a little bit about how things have evolved. And I'd love to hear about how your coaching philosophy has evolved, especially as you mentioned with the recent disruption. You know, it's not growth at all costs anymore. AI is a big thing. Remote work is more prevalent. How has it evolved in the last couple of years, especially?
We could probably take a couple of hours on this one. You touched on something I promise I'll try not to rant on, but I can tell you right now with great certainty, if I started my career today, I probably wouldn't be where I am. And the reason why is because of technology. I'm almost ready to get off LinkedIn. I'm almost ready to get off all social media. I mean, I'm literally this close because you go through these posts and, you know, I have clients and friends that send me this, like, Keith, what do you think of this? And I would jump on and I would say, my first response is written by AI. So anyone today can be, quote unquote, a subject matter expert, especially when they're going to ChatGPT saying, oh, can you write me an article on the 10 best qualifying questions that salespeople can use? And ChatGPT pulls it out and then puts it in front of this layman. And what this person doesn't see is the little cliff notes as to where ChatGPT pulled the information out. And typically, it's from another professional's website, my website, or someone else. So what are they really doing? They're allowing ChatGPT to repurpose content that's not theirs, that's been out there for a while. And quite frankly, I think it's sad. You know, when I first jumped on LinkedIn, it was all about, and listen, even today, it's about building a professional community. I'm not going to take that away. Of all social media, I am a massive fan of LinkedIn. But at the same time, I'm seeing these posts that are coming up. They're more pitches than giving value. They're disguised as giving value. Actually, to support what I'm sharing, I think the last time I checked, 56% of all posts are written by AI.
Yeah.
56%. So now what's going to happen when that's 60? What's going to happen when that's 70? We are losing our humanity from creativity. We are allowing technology to overcome what we as human beings need to continually do, which is innovation and creativity. We're relying too much, I think, on technology. And do I think, which is the quintessential question that many people ask, is technology ever going to replace people's jobs? Now, I'll be the first to say, are there certain jobs that technology can replace? Absolutely. But when it comes to professional selling and leadership, there is no technology in the world that can replace care. There's no technology in the world that can help foster connection, authenticity, transparency, with people connecting on a deeper level than they never had to do before. Because of the changing landscape, and now we live in this hybrid world. So, you know, going back to technology, listen, I'm a tech geek. I love technology. At the same time, we really need to be mindful of maintaining our level of curiosity and innovation before it gets stagnated. And to me, that is my greatest fear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we talk on here all the time about, will AI replace salespeople? And it's no. Like, I ultimately buy technology or whatever I'm buying, partially because I like the people I'm working with and I trust the people I'm working with. And so I think it's figuring out, like, how does AI help you do the manual tasks that a human doesn't actually need to do so you can spend more time doing the things that humans do well, which is connection and care, as you spoke to. So,
And I'm all about automation and I'm all about streamlining and scaling. However, when it comes to sales and when it comes to that human connection, the last time I checked, technology doesn't sell. Salespeople sell.
Yes.
And, you know, I talk to people all the time and I would ask them, when you're making a considerable purchase, what was the last time you bought from a chat box? Never. Yeah. So who do you buy from? Well, I buy from someone, a person, a human being. Yeah. To me, that will never be replaced.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially for more sizable, like product-led growth, sure, you can probably get away with AI and for smaller purchases.
Now, of course, if we're, you know, maybe 500 years in the future and the Terminator lands and we can't tell the difference, that's a whole other conversation. All right.
Well, maybe we don't even have jobs then, and we just, the money works in a different way, or you don't need money. Who knows? But yeah, we're not there yet.
Lucy, I'm sorry to go on a tangent, but you just reminded me of a movie. You guys ever see the movie WALL-E?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If that wasn't a foreshadowing of our society today, I don't know what movie is.
I'll have to go back and watch. It's been a minute. I want to know a little bit before we dive into more of like your coaching questions, but what are kind of the core principles that you believe every leader should follow when coaching their teams?
Yeah. The pandemic has changed everything, you know, and everyone today is going through something. There is a deep level of empathy that needs to happen today for not only leaders, but salespeople as well. And we have never been in or had this level of exposure in people's lives than we do today. After all, you're in my office now. I'm in your office. I'm in your home. When managers are doing conference calls, a lot of times, you know, they're seeing, you know, people at their kitchen table, or if they are lucky, they have a home office. And we've never had this level of exposure before. So the predominant sales and leadership strategy today is simple. It's care. It's care. It's not focusing on our metrics. It's not focusing on our KPIs. It's not focusing on our sales quota as the primary focus. Now, of course, those things are essential. However, to get there, to build a cohesive team, to build a team that will do anything for you, to be able to have that level of transparency and trust and self-accountability and self-motivation to perform, the only thing that's going to foster that is a sense of feeling like teams are being cared for. My manager really cares. That's what people want. Unfortunately, statistics say otherwise. There is a mass exodus that is happening out there. Again, I am not a stat guy, but I think, again, the last time I checked, 92% of people are considering leaving their job in the next year. Guys, 92%, we have never experienced this before. And if we've never experienced this before, what that means is companies need to take a step up, stop reacting to all these things, get ahead of it, and start being responsive to that, and really, really put their people over profit.
Yeah.
You know, we could talk a good game about that, and you could walk into a company's office and see this beautifully framed vision statement and mission and values of like, wow, this is a company I want to work with or work for. And then you get in and you kind of look behind the screen and behind the boardroom, and it's like, just like every result-driven, metrics-driven organization. Does it mean they don't want to honor that? Absolutely not. I guarantee every person in that organization does. But because every organization is result-driven, that gets put on the back burner and yeah. Results become primary.
Can you teach how to care?
Interesting. My answer is yes. And I'm smiling because the majority of managers who truly do care and are trying to do their best to coach don't often weave care into their coaching. Often that what they perceive as coaching is really directive management or, quite frankly, manipulation, which can sound like, hey, let me coach you on this, Lizzie. Don't you think it would be a good idea to call procurement and ask them why they want 2 more discount points? Wait a second, boss. I think I just came up with an idea. I'm going to call procurement and ask them why they want 2 more discount points. Great coaching. Thank you so much. No, you just Jedi mind tricked them. That's called manipulation, not coaching, when you have your agenda all over the question. And then managers come to me and they say, Keith, you know, I'm having a hard time coming up with the questions that guide people to where I want them to be. Well, that's called manipulation. That's not coaching. The definition of coaching is the mindset, which we'll get right back into, the habit, okay, and the skill set that creates new possibilities in every conversation. So going back to your point about care, many managers perceive coaching as something they use because they have to fix something. Something's broken. Someone's an underperformer. Okay, coaching kicks in. Well, think about that. You think that A players would want to be coached? Because they're watching the manager thinking, you're only coaching the underperformers or people with problems. I don't want remedial coaching. I'm good. And then managers wonder why their people, their A people or their B people don't want to be coached. So, you know, getting back to this is number two is not only do managers perceive coaching as something when they need to be fixed, they also look at coaching as something where there's an action step, as in I'm going to coach you on something and then you're going to do something, whether it's an activity, conversation, a task, whatever that is.
It's like an automation, a trigger and an action. Yeah.
The big miss, and this is where managers really, really, it's almost, they don't even know this miss, is the greatest gap, which is coaching mindset and coaching attitude and coaching people's way of thinking, you know, and their belief system and their internal narrative. These are the things that managers drop the ball on. I'll give you a perfect example. I was coaching a CEO yesterday. He was talking about one of his reps. And, he was having a conversation with this rep. And this rep really needed to step up their game. And they needed to make more calls. And they needed to close more deals. You know, I'm sure it's a conversation that no manager ever has. You know, here they are. They're coaching and they're focusing on, okay, this is what you need to do. And then a week later, they go by and they go to the sales rep, and the sales rep still didn't make the number of calls they needed to. Now, the manager, the CEO is getting frustrated. And this happens another week and another week and another week. And yesterday we're speaking and he said to me, Keith, I am so frustrated with the salesperson. And it clearly came off when he was communicating with them. And he wasn't coaching. He was being directive. He's like, listen, you know, I've given you these scripts. I've given you these templates. You know, you have access to all the leads, you know, you have access to all the leads we generate from the trade shows. You know, why aren't you making 50 calls a week? Okay. Well, all that's doing is putting that person on the defensive. Then my client says, Keith, I don't understand why they don't come to me for help. Well, why do you think they don't want to come to you? You tell me. Yeah. Okay. Here's the thing. The root cause of that problem isn't a pitch. It isn't a process. It is not a strategy. The root cause of that problem that my client missed, and which most managers do, is the mindset, not the go do, the go be. You see, the root cause in this scenario wasn't skill and it wasn't will. It was they had a mental block in their mind that inhibited their ability to pick up that phone and make those calls.
Yeah.
So what is then that mindset? Well, if I was then to coach that person, the first question I would ask is, so before you pick up that phone and make calls, walk me through your internal dialogue. What does that sound like? You know, when you say you're reluctant to pick up the phone and call, unpack that for me a little more. What are you going to hear? You're not going to hear, well, I don't have a process or I don't have support. You're going to hear, well, you know what? I don't want to mess up. I don't want to intrude. I don't want to interrupt people because I don't like it when it's done to me. You know, I don't want to blow a sale. What happens if another rep can call and actually make the sale and I'm the one who messes it up? And notice what happens. I. So what is the greatest trap for salespeople? And what is the root cause of call reluctance? The salesperson is making selling about them. What they have to stand to lose or what they have to gain rather than making it about the customer. And when you make it about the customer, okay, just like when the manager makes it about their team, I have the saying, if you want to serve yourself best, lose yourself in the service of others. Now, I don't want to take attribution for that. Gandhi said that, okay? And in no way am I comparing myself to Gandhi here, okay? But if you think about that, there's so much truth into that. If we really want to care, if we really want to serve others, we have to get out of our own head and stop focusing on what's in it for me, but focus on what I can give. How can I impact this person? How can I make them more valuable than they were yesterday? How can I make my clients more valuable than they were yesterday?
Yep.
And when you think from that perspective, rather than, okay, I need to sell to hit quota, it changes everything.
Yep.
It changes everything.
I think the sales is the hardest to convince that approach because it's by default very opportunistic function in a company that has a very tangible results in the end of whatever they do. I think if the answer is coaching, the question I have for you is, how would you recommend the managers to find time for this? Because often I see across the organizations that I've been part of or I was working with, I see that they perceive the coaching as a stepchild of managerial function, right? It's a results. Like we said here, this matters. But the coaching is leading you to be a better performer. And I often compare this to athletic performance. Whether you're a great performer, you're Olympian, or you are just starting in the sports, you still need a coach.
Yeah.
Right? So how would you recommend first-line managers, second-line managers to approach this and not treat this as a to-do list, but also reflect on this as a deeply ingrained component of the managerial performance?
There's a couple of really good questions in there, Demetrius, and I want to make sure I tackle them all. I want to start with a quick story, because I think it will illustrate the point. And again, having traveled the world, and this is when I was in Ireland, one of my favorite countries. And it was end of day two of my on-site sales leadership coaching program. And we were going around the room, you know, debriefing. Hey, you know, let's talk about, you know, we spent 2 days together. What are you walking away with? What are you excited about? You know, what are you looking forward to doing in terms of impacting your team? And we're going around the room and heard some really, really great stuff. And finally, we got to this one manager. And this one manager said, Keith, I am totally bought into coaching. Okay. I see the value. I know that this is something I need to do for my team. However, I'm struggling with trying to fit coaching around all of my other responsibilities. Now, before I responded, another manager jumped in and said, wait a second. You need to look at this in a different way. You can't ask how you're going to fit coaching around all of your other responsibilities. You have to ask yourself, how are you going to fit all of your other responsibilities around coaching? And that's the fundamental transformational shift in thinking that leaders need to make to truly make their people the number one priority. So going back to your point, manager saying, oh, Keith, I don't have time to coach, which kind of, you know, segues into the story I'm saying. You know, I have results to hit. I have meetings. I got fires to put out. When I hear managers say, I don't have time to coach, it's very evident that they don't know what coaching is. It's just like when I'm speaking to a team of senior executives or sales enablement, and they say, well, we want our people to coach 70% of the time. Okay, A, coaching is not something you do to someone. It is not an event. In the most simplest terms, coaching is a language and a mindset, which means if it's a language and mindset, that is something you're doing all the time. It is how you communicate. It is upgrading your level of communication and connection. In essence, when you change the conversation, you're going to change the outcome. So let's go back now to those managers, which are scattered all over our world, that say, I don't have time to coach, whether they believe in it or not. And these other managers, these senior executives, when they tell me, Keith, I want my people to coach 70% of the time, my response is, that's like telling your people to breathe 70% of the time. Okay. It's not something that you're going to do 70% of the time and measure it. It's something that happens in every company. So now let's get tactical for a second. I created a specific model years ago because I got so tired of wherever I went in the world of managers saying, Keith, I get this framework and it makes perfect sense if I have more time. But, you know, I don't have time to coach through this whole framework. Okay, well, let me share something with you. If you can coach in less than 60 seconds, would you be open to exploring that? That's an enrollment question. And I need confirmation. Of course, they said yes. Okay. And then I teach them what I've developed called the 60-second coaching strategy. And basically, this is what it sounds like. And every leader or even salesperson or basically anyone who is watching this right now, you can take this and use this in your very next conversation. If someone is coming to you looking for help, here's what it sounds like. I'm the manager. One of my direct reports comes to me. Hey, boss, I could really use your help on this deal. Now, I have two paths right now. I could take this path and be the quintessential chief problem solver who is like a heat-seeking missile, who is just looking to solve everyone's problems, okay? Or I can go this way and know what I need to do as a leader and lead conversations with questions, not answers. So this is what that sounds like. You know, I'm happy to share my opinion with you, Tim. However, you're a lot closer to this situation and customer than I am. And I trust you and I trust your judgment. So what's your opinion on how to achieve the results you want? Now, guys, I'm from New York. I speak fast. I purposely slowed down my case and my tone. I think I did that in under 30 seconds. There is not a leader in the world who can challenge me and say, Keith, I can't do that. You're telling me you can't ask one question when someone comes over to you rather than viscerally respond with an answer because you assume it's faster to give an answer than coaching? Well, let's break that one down, just like I heard from my client yesterday. You keep giving answers to people today, you'll be giving answers to them for the rest of their career, okay? You coach them today. You are building their critical thinking. You are building trust in you and in themselves. And most importantly for salespeople, you're building their confidence. Well, what do you think is going to happen when you continually have conversations like this? Eventually, that person is no longer to be knocking on your door because you've empowered them to solve their issues on their own. That's how you get your time back. That's your lesson in time management. Conversely, you're the chief problem solver and you perceive giving out the answer is quicker than coaching, and you're going to be giving them the answer for the rest of their career, because what you have inherently done is you have created dependency. So every person on your team is thinking, well, I have a problem. I know who's going to fix it. Let me go to my manager. They'll fix it for me. And then managers wonder why their day is spent putting out fires and doing everyone else's job. When you're looking at the 60-second strategy in just 30 seconds, number one, you're acknowledging the person that they are closer to the situation, okay? Number two, you're telling them that you trust them and you trust their judgment. Well, what do you think that's going to do for their level of trust and confidence? And finally, you're asking a question. What's your opinion on how to achieve the results you want? Reality is created in language. Coaching is a very specific language. Notice the word I use. I didn't say, what's your answer? What's your strategy? What's your solution? Because answers, strategies, and solutions can be wrong or right. When I ask for someone's opinion, opinions are not wrong or right. They just are. And everyone has them, and they're not to be judged. So when you ask someone for their opinion, they can't say to you, I don't know. You don't know your opinion? What's your opinion on your favorite food? What's your opinion on your favorite movie? What's your opinion on your favorite sport? What's your opinion on your favorite place to visit? None of these answers are right or wrong, and everyone has one. It's up to the coach to uncover that, okay, in a less threatening way. Now, there are leaders right now thinking, Keith, that's great if they come up with the right answer, okay, and let them run with it. But what happens if they have a half-baked answer or a solution that I know will not work? Do I just say, how long have you been on your job? No, unless you want to erode trust. What you're going to respond with is say, thank you so much for sharing your opinion. I appreciate it. Let's walk through your ideas together so that the both of us can assess your process and create the best solution that's going to achieve the results you want. Now it's a collaboration. It's not an interrogation. And this is what people want. They want to be collaborated with, because when you keep giving the answer, granted, there are people that are going to think, oh, this is great. I love it. I don't have to think. And the best part about it is if my boss's solution is wrong, it's not my fault. It's their fault. But there are other people that will go to their manager when their manager gives them an answer and think, I guess my manager doesn't trust me. I guess they don't have confidence in me. I guess they don't think I can do my job. What do you think that's going to do to their performance, to their confidence, and to the relationship that you have with them? You know, it's going to utterly destroy it. And for those managers that are sitting there thinking they could give answers all day long, I will tell you this, you cannot scale dependency.
Here's a follow-up question on this one. I often hear this also from the customers where they say, you know, look, it's all great, right? Coaching, I'm bought into this. I'm happy to change my approach, but I'm a first-line manager.
Yeah.
But there's a leadership in this company that doesn't have a buy-in. So what would you recommend to the first-line manager, second-line, even line manager to do in order to get the buy-in on that approach from the top?
You know, you have hit a serious, serious hot button on that question, because that is absolutely endemic globally. Just like globally, most managers are the chief problem solver, because after all, most of them graduated from being a salesperson, never trained in how to coach. So what are they going to do? Be a super salesperson. So, you know, to your point, I see two opportunities, and I'm going to ask you to repeat the question again after I share this one. The first thing is, if you look at an organization and you're a frontline manager and your organization is pretty big, trying to change a culture, your perception could be it's like trying to, you know, move a battleship. You know, it could be really overwhelming and take a long time. Well, what if that's not the answer? What if the solution is for each leader to create a subculture? Now, when I introduced this concept, I didn't know at that point that subculture is actually a word until I looked it up. And it truly basically is a culture that lives within a culture, which happens all over the world. And we're bringing it now into the business landscape. So when I'm coaching managers on this, I say, listen, forget about trying to change the organizational culture. Let's talk about what you can impact right now. And what you can impact right now is your team. Because your team is speaking to you every day. They're communicating with you every day. They're looking for your help and support every day. Hopefully, you're coaching them effectively every day. You're also providing training and support. Okay. So essentially, you're the culture, Mr. or Mrs. Manager. So the good news is managers get to create the culture and the environment that they want and that their people want on their team. And that's fully in their power. So to me, that inspires managers to be able to say, you know what? I might not have control on the entire org, but I can have influence on my team and create a team that's thriving and create an opportunity where they're not sacrificing their personal lives and they have that life balance and that we're cohesive when we're collaborating together. Well, who's responsible for that? Avalanche is rolled downhill. Starts with the manager. And that's the good news, because they have the power to change. The second thing that managers can do, and specifically frontline managers, is coach up. They can coach up. And coaching is challenging enough for many managers because you're really rewiring them. Coaching up to their managers viscerally, their reaction is fear. Wait, you're telling me to coach my manager? Yes, that's what I'm saying. Because a true coaching culture, okay, not only is a caring culture, but that means not only is the manager coaching their team, but their team is coaching the manager. Their team is coaching their customers. Managers are coaching their peers and coworkers. Managers are also coaching up to their leaders. That's a true coaching culture. No more department silos. Everyone is working towards a unified goal to support each other. I mean, I know it sounds Pollyannic, but there are companies out there that are actually thriving with this culture. Unfortunately, it's only about 2%.
It's got to be kind of infectious in the right culture. Like if you start coaching and it's like, what's working on your team? And you're like, well, this is what I'm doing. And then someone else copies it. And that's not going to happen in every culture, unfortunately, but in a lot, it will be infectious.
Most definitely. And just building off what you said, Lizzie, it's, why are they going to President's Club? Well, why are they crushing their number? We have the same number. We're working for the same company. We have the same number of employees and salespeople. What are they doing? And all of a sudden, you know what? That starts spreading organically. And I just want to just build off my other point in terms of coaching up is, what does that sound like? Again, you know, it's one thing to say you can coach up to your manager and the manager's like, what the heck does that sound like? Well, again, coaching and leadership is a language. So I want, you know, your listeners and to really be able to leave here and say, I got some solid skills I can execute today. That's why this podcast is so amazing and why I'm always tuned into it. And coaching up could sound as simple as this. Go to your manager and say, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Manager, what I want for you and what I want for the organization is to create a collective, collaborative organization and culture where we're all working together to achieve our unified goals. And there are things that I know as a manager that I respond to in terms of managers and my manager pulling the best out of me. And I would love to chat with you about how I best respond to the type of management that's really going to inspire me and get me to my potential. And there are some great things that you're doing now, and hoping that we could talk about this to make sure we're really solidifying this to ensure that you're not only getting the best out of me, but the best out of my team. Are you open to chatting about this? That's coaching up. Now, what was the premise behind that? Was, Keith, I hate the way my manager coaches me. Okay. And what do you think the manager is thinking? Again, well, wait a second. I know how I like to be managed. I'm a very direct person. Keith is a very direct person. If I was your employee, if you said, Keith, go out, this is what you need to do. You messed up on this. Now go fix it. I'll be like, guys, I'm on it. I'm doing it. You do that to some people, you will literally make them cry. Managers need to adopt their communication on how other people like to communicate.
Yeah.
And that is where, you know, looking at coaching up, I'm basically just enrolling my manager in a conversation on how you can get the most out of me and my team. What leader wouldn't want to have that conversation? The alternative is that, you know, what do people do? They say, oh, my manager, they're so directive. They're always on top of me. They micromanage me. And then before, you know, their manager knows it, that person put in their resignation notice and have no idea why.
Yep.
Let's approach this maybe from a different angle, because we're talking about these positive things, right? But in your book, Sales Leadership, you outlined the 15 toxic tactics that can make coaching ineffective, right? I'm always referring to this coach to coach, like how to be a good coach. And that's prevalent across the sales organizations. Not only, I think in a lot of organizations in general, they struggle, you know, athletes too. What is one of the most common mistakes you see managers make? And how they can be avoided, right? How they can do better, just not step into that and crawl back from this hole.
Yeah. Well, one of the things at least we already unpacked was managers basically confusing coaching with closing people or manipulation, okay? That's one major trap that managers are using questions that are trying to guide the person to where they want to be. But when you're coaching someone, it's never, and I don't often talk in absolutes, it's never the manager's agenda. If someone approaches you, it's always the coach's agenda. Now, conversely, I know managers are thinking, well, Keith, what if I observe someone who's toxic? What if I observe someone who did something during a meeting that wasn't really a best practices that people really had a negative reaction to? Am I supposed to ignore that? Absolutely not. You're going to approach them, but you're going to enroll them. Just like we talked about what it sounds like coaching up. Just like we talked about when it sounds like that 60-second coaching strategy. Even though those are coaching questions, they're also enrolling people in a positive way because people understand why you're doing it. Okay. Most managers are really good at telling people what they need to do and then wonder why people aren't adopting the change. It's because they don't see what's in it for them. But when managers move from the what to here's what's in it for you and here's why we're doing it, now all of a sudden, leaders are able to align what each individual wants personally with their business goals. And when managers master that communication skill of enrollment, they will always be able to create the alignment and buy-in they need around any change or any new initiative. You know, talking kind of backwards on this is the one thing is managers fail to enroll people to create alignment and buy-in. And they're often not doing it from a conscious level, but they'll play the power card. You know, hey, you know, Demetrius, Lizzie, new initiative coming down. Here's something I know that it doesn't resonate with any company, but we're rolling out a new CRM and we need full adoption on that. Okay. I think the adoption of CRM globally is about 47%. And then the rest of the team, managers are spending time trying to sell them on why they need it. No. The root cause of why there's no adoption is because you told them what they need to do, but you never connected what to why. And what's in it for them? Hey guys, if we are able to roll this out, it's going to save you 20 hours a week. It's going to speed up your sales cycle. It's going to accelerate your pipeline. Okay. It's going to improve your pipeline accuracy. And it's going to help you get to your quota a lot faster with less effort because you don't have to worry about remembering everything up here and automate a lot of the things in the CRM so you don't have to do it anymore. Now, I can tell you straight out, no manager is saying that because if they were, they would have, which is the one organization or several organizations I've worked with around this, have a 99 or 100% adoption. But they're not taking that approach. And again, a lot of traps that managers fall into. I alluded to the other trap. I call it coaching in your own image or managing in your own image, which is, well, I know how I like to be managed. So I'm going to assume everyone else likes to be managed the same way. I know how I like to be motivated. So I'm going to assume everyone else is coin operated. Well, that's not necessarily true. And managers often coach the way and manage the way they like to be managed. And that's a costly assumption because we're not tapping into people's individuality. And I have a very subtle distinction when I speak to managers and I ask them, well, you know, what do you do? And they'll say, well, I manage a team of 10 salespeople. And I would tell them, no, you don't. And they would say, Keith, as if you know my job, that's not what I'm alluding to. What I'm suggesting is you don't manage a team of 10 salespeople. You manage 10 individuals who happen to share the same job function. A subtle distinction, but a very important one. The first implies you're going to manage everyone the same and build mini-me's and robots. The second implies you're going to take the time to uncover in a one-on-one conversation how people like to be managed, how people like to be motivated, how they like to be held accountable, how they like to be inspired, how they like to be followed up. Because most managers do not know, and they bang their head against the wall. How can I get my people motivated? How can I hold them accountable? Managers, you're asking the wrong person. Ask your people, they'll happily tell you. And I must bring this up because it's such a global epidemic. And it's, in my humble opinion, probably the single biggest detriment to companies developing a not only a coaching culture, but for managers to really help their people and help themselves evolve into a great coach. And that's being present. And I have a whole module on this when I'm working with leaders, and I'll talk to maybe sales enablement, and I'll review the agenda, and they'll see at the end that Keith's talking about being present. How does that connect to what you're talking about? Meditation? I mean, what are you talking about? I'll say, well, every organization on this planet, okay, is a victim of their culture. Every organization is result driven. Every organization has targets on their back. Where do the targets live? Where do the goals live? I'm going to get cerebral on everyone here. The future. What are the 3 points in time? Past, present, future. Where do most salespeople and managers focus on? The result. Where does the result reside? In the future. Coaching is the art, habit, language, and mindset of creating new possibilities. Well, let's break this down. Where can you create those possibilities? Not in the future. You do it in the moment. Coaching happens in the present. And most people need to make a fundamental shift from what's next to what's now. Because this is not just a lesson in leadership. It's a lesson in life. And unfortunately, because we are victims of this result-driven culture, and where coaching happens in the moment and connection happens in the moment, think about what you can't do. You can't actively listen. It happens in the present. You can't create a new possibility. Creation happens in the present, okay? Possibilities are created in the present. Your goals, your results, your fears, your worries, your stresses, all future-based. Yep. So in essence, you can't coach unless you're in the moment. You can't listen unless you're in the moment. And quite frankly, think about the greater cost. Your life. Because that's the present is where life happens.
I can't stop smiling. You're speaking to all my Brené Brown and Arbinger Institute readings over the years. We focus a lot on coaching. I do want to focus a little bit on the sellers as well. I have a couple questions about that. So what are some of the like common traits or skills that you see in successful sellers?
It's interesting. When I deliver my sales training program, I don't actually do sales training. Quite frankly, sales, the general model of sales has not changed in 45 years. Okay. Granted, there are still fundamental principles that exist today, but if you're still selling the same way you did pre-pandemic, you're already DOA. Again, another statistic, but I know there are my friends out there that love statistics. 76% of organizations change the way they buy after the pandemic. Yep. Procurement, number of people making decisions, decision makers, influencers, advocates. 76% of companies change the way they buy. Only 17% of companies change the way they sell. And then they wonder why they're hitting roadblocks and their people aren't performing because they're not getting coached and they're not evolving their processes.
What are some of those changes in buying? Have you dug into that and understood?
Yeah, and you know, getting back, I'm sorry, to your question is I find a lot of the characteristics and competencies apply to leadership as it does to sales. And as I was mentioning before, is if sales hasn't changed so long, but the landscape of our customers and what their needs are and how they make their purchasing decisions have changed, well, then we have to evolve too. And what I do now is I'm not doing the typical sales training and how to close and overcome objections, which to me is sort of ridiculous if you think about it, because how can salespeople overcome objections? Whose objection is it? It's the customer's. Yeah. So who needs to overcome their objection? The customer. Who tries to overcome the objection? The salesperson. And then we wonder why they butt heads. Okay. So where am I going with this? Well, what if objections are diffused with questions? What if the best salespeople today are actually coaching their customers to succeed? The evolution of sales training is teaching salespeople how to coach their customers today. And that is the evolution. And think about the added benefit of that. Now, companies are able to eradicate one of the biggest challenges that they're faced with, which is, I just promoted a salesperson into management. And no, of course, we didn't train them or anything, but you know, they're not performing. They're just slammed with you know, helping people and close deals. Well, now sellers know how to coach. When they get promoted into management, they already have the skill set. They already have the mindset. You're already building the future bench of leaders.
Coming from a partnerships background, and I've overseen sales teams as well, but it came from partnerships, I'm trying to figure out, like, should we partner? That is how I'm going into the conversation. Not, can I close this deal? But like, should we have a partnership? So then when I went into sales, that was my, I'm like, should we even be working together? Do they need this? And that comes with questions and asking things. And I fully am aligned with, like, maybe it's not like I need to close this. It's like, should I close this? Mm-hmm. Is this the right thing for me to close? And how do I find that out?
It's amazing how, you know, salespeople kind of just, you know, they cross their fingers and they use hope as a sales strategy. And last time I checked, hope is not a strategy. And to me, because of the fact that they're not taking that time, not just to qualify, but to disqualify, the worst thing, and what managers, they look at their salespeople, they might even look at a good salesperson and say, why aren't they performing? Well, if a good salesperson is focusing on the wrong prospects and following up on the wrong prospects all day long, they're not focusing on the right ones. And then we wonder why people aren't performing. Sometimes it's not skill or will. Sometimes it's just their focus is on the wrong prospects that will never, ever buy.
Yeah.
So salespeople need to, and this really does speak to another area where leaders need to uncover how to coach the inner game. And this is how I coach coaches on how to do this, is how do you coach fear? How do you coach fear? You ask a manager, they have no idea. They'll just be like, just get through it. You know, you can do this. Just keep going. No. So today, a lot of salespeople are driven by fear. And if you're driven by fear, then you're making it about you and you're no longer making it about the prospect and the value you can deliver.
And if you focus on that, you're going to be a lot better off. So moving into kind of what we typically do, our kudos to the industry round, but a little bit more around what you think people should be focusing on. So what are three essential coaching techniques every sales manager should master? We've talked a lot about care, but if you have like some hard hitting points here.
Absolutely. Number one, master the 60-second coaching strategy. Number two, focus on being present. That starts with waking up in the morning. I'm wired just like salespeople and managers. That's why I get along with them so well. I'll go to sleep with a thought and wake up with that same thought and just start my day. No, that puts you in a state of reaction. I implore people to develop a healthy routine in the morning. What people don't realize is they already have a routine. It may not be healthy though, okay? So when I'm working with leaders, I would ask them, you know, what could you do that would give you a sense of peace and focus and unclutter your mind so you can start your day? And I would hear things like work out, exercise, read the Bible, meditate, play with my kids, get them ready for school, take the dog for a walk, have breakfast with my spouse or significant other. And I would ask them, well, do you have these things woven in into your morning routine? And typically I hear, well, sometimes, intermittently. Okay, well, I think we're missing out on the consistency, right? Because if I could work out one day a month, gosh, I would save so much time.
Okay? Yeah.
Won't get the results, but we need consistency. So I can share what my personal routine is every morning to give people an idea. Is as soon as I open my eyes, I do 5 minutes of gratitude. And my dear friend actually taught me this, who's a yoga instructor and also is she had recovered from cancer. And 5 minutes, I open my eyes and I say, thank you, God, and whatever religion, whatever God you pray to, thank you, God, for my beautiful, healthy wife. Thank you, God, for my 3 beautiful, healthy children. Thank you, God, for this house. Thank you, God, for my eyes to see. And you're also talking about someone who lost 70% of their vision several years ago. Thank you, God, for my legs to walk. You know, we often don't appreciate these things until they're taken away from us. And I do that sense of gratitude. And then I'll go into my office before I get my tea or coffee. And I'll just sit like I'm sitting now. And you can't see, but right now there's windows right here. And I would sit and I would start looking out the window. And then I would shut my eyes. And, you know, people can call it meditation what you want. But I just do deep breathing. 10 to 20 deep breaths in through my nose, out through my mouth. And it's amazing. By the time I'm at about 10, my head is already clear. And that's when I'm ready to start my day. And I'll always know when I didn't do my morning ritual, when in the middle of the day, why do I feel off?
Yeah.
Self-care is non-negotiable. You cannot take care of others unless you take care of yourself.
Yeah, mine's gym and a podcast. Those are my non-negotiables in the morning. What are a couple either leaders or organizations that you think are doing innovative coaching and leadership practices?
Oh, wow. I can get in trouble with this one. I don't know.
All right. You don't have to name names.
Well, you know, there are some. I mean, I love all of my clients, and there are clients that are just so, so passionate and committed to making a difference with their people. And if I started naming companies now of my clients, I'd literally go through my whole list. Because
hopefully
there's a reason why they're my clients, right?
Yeah.
Because they really want to instill positive change with their people. And that's why I always say, you know, avalanches start at the top. I can say, speaking with 2 prospects that reached out to me, I'm at a point where, and I have to say this doesn't always happen, but dealing with 2 multi-billion-dollar companies, the people that are initiating this program for a rollout of coaching, they're like, okay, Keith, I want you to speak to our CEO. Now, why am I pointing this out? Because it's very rare that I have that opportunity to not only speak with the CEO, but where the CEO is taking such a vital part of the development of their people and they make it a priority that they want to put time to talk a little about me. And that, to me, is such a testament to the organization and to the CEO when they are really making that the priority. Because the higher you go up, and I'm generalizing, the less you're connected to the field. And the more connected you are to your stakeholders, to your investors.
To the board. That's a really good view of which companies are leaned into this. I think, you know, we talk a lot about AI and technology and the tools and whatever it may be. I think for companies to be successful, it comes to leadership and organizational culture. And so I'm happy to hear people are still leaning in and we're in a new age. And I'm excited you're here to help guide companies through this. So thank you so much for your time today. Tons of great pieces of wisdom that came out of this. And I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, well, thank you for your time. And if anyone here, your listeners, want to grab some free resources I just developed, they can always, first of all, guys, connect with me on LinkedIn because I have tons of content I'm always sharing. And definitely jump on my website, keithrosen.com. I released 3 new mini books. Okay. 3, not 1, not 2, not 3. And hey, full transparency, ChatGPT helped me with this stuff. Okay. And it's really, really cool because not only can you download these 3 books, but I have them translated in Mandarin and Spanish. And I also have the audio version for those people that like to listen while they're driving. And yes, I have those translated as well in Mandarin and Spanish. And the real cool part is I clone my voice. So you're listening to me speak Mandarin and Spanish. I am fluent in Spanish. I am not fluent in Mandarin. However, when you listen to that audio, you might think, wow, Keith could speak so many different languages. So that is something I really, as you could see, I'm so excited about, because I want people to take advantage of these tools. They're there. Managers, salespeople, grab them. I promise they will make a massive impact on the people around you and to your success. So, you know, until then, I just want to share one other point, is that people create the culture, right? And what's so important is that what managers need to realize is what their core, their primary objective is every day. And when managers wake up in the morning, they often think, what do I need to do to hit my business objectives today? And that's the wrong question based on what we all talked about today. The right question is, what do I need to do to make my people and my customers more successful and more valuable today than they were yesterday? That's the transformational shift every leader needs to make. And when they do, that's when results follow.
I love it. On that last piece of great advice, thank you again, Keith. We appreciate it.
Thank you.